Welcome to Social Geek Radio, brought to you by Social Joey and Deb Evans Consulting. Here is your host, Jack Munson.
We are driving it home with one headlight. This is Social Geek Radio. Hey geeks, how you doing? Got a big favor to ask. We're looking for some help in growing this podcast. And what that means is we need some awesome reviews over at iTunes. So if you're enjoying our conversations here, please do me a favor and jump over to iTunes, give us a quick review, and maybe tell a friend about us as well. Okay, we have an all Chicago edition of Social Geek Radio, which means it's even cooler than usual. Our guest today, returning to the show, one of our favorites, it's Debbie Harvey, founder and CEO of DHW Executive Consulting and the founder of Dining Digest Chicago. Debbie, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jack. How are you?
I am just fine. Welcome to summertime in Chicago. We went from being huddled inside restaurants to now suddenly dining al fresco every day here.
I know, and I'm loving it. People complain about the heat. I think they have a very short memory of 4 weeks ago. So I myself am pleasantly happy to get outside and get to some rooftop patios and dine al fresco and get some work done. So welcome to summer indeed.
Right. I think 4 months ago, we were exactly 100 degrees cooler than we are today.
That seems very, very true.
So let's start with a little of your background in case some of the folks haven't had the pleasure of hearing your earlier appearances or may not be as familiar with Dining Digest or with DHW Consulting. Tell us your story. What's your background?
Oh, that's a loaded question, but I'm happy to share a little bit. And thank you for having me back on Social Geek Radio. I myself will go give a review right after this on iTunes.
Hey, I got one. All right.
Yeah, exactly. It's not just because I'm on it. But I've been in the PR marketing industry. I've had great experiences helping to build and launch brands both in-house and on the agency side. As a senior vice president at a global communications agency for a while. And then when I was last on your show, I was the vice president of marketing and operations at the American Medical Association. I recently launched my own consultancy, DHW Executive Consulting, LLC, as you mentioned. And what am I doing? You know, I'm really looking to develop, you know, smart, savvy insights to help clients develop strategies, content, basically storytelling. Things that you guys do really well on this show. And it was born of the idea that, you know, good companies don't have to pay necessarily exorbitant prices of big agencies. So when you have executive level practitioners like myself, you're going to get that kind of focus. And then I also have the ability to bring in other practitioners through my network to help with design and web programming and web development, things like that. So it's been a wild ride. It's only been, you know, fewer than 8 weeks, but I've got 3 clients and raring to go.
Wow. So that's quite a move to go from, you know, a nice, I don't know if I'd say comfortable, but an established organization like the AMA to jumping into entrepreneurship and launching your own consultancy. How did your experiences with the AMA and the larger agencies, how did that really affect how you started this business? Did you come at it from a little bit of a different angle than if you would have just, you know, gone from, you know, done it 10 years ago or something like that?
You know, I believe it's Eleanor Roosevelt that said, do something that scares yourself every day.
Oh, I love
and
that.
I think anyone who starts with his or her own business would be lying if they didn't say that. Yeah, there's a scare factor every day. You know, what I realized, though, and I think, yes, both in leading teams on the agency side, in-house, managing external agencies, my strength is really, I think, my passion that I bring to clients and that that almost intangible understanding of client strategy so innately that you can anticipate their needs. I mean, that's advice that I've given to my teams over the last nearly 2 decades of know what they need, anticipate their needs 2 steps before they do, and deliver before they ask. And that makes you a great partner. It makes you invaluable to a company. And that, I think, was the genesis, well, one of the genesis of me being able to have the confidence to take that next step. So out of the gate, networking, of course, and I've gone, to the proverbial Rolodex, and two of my current clients were actually former clients from about 8 or 10 years ago. And that spoke volumes to the partnerships and the relationships that I have built and also sustained with them.
You know what I love about that is you can look at return on investment, or as Ted Rubin calls it, return on relationship. And someone could say, how long have you been working with that client? And some people might say, well, she just got the client. It's only been 8 weeks. But the reality is you've been working with that client for 10 years or whatever the time period is. That's the that's what you've been investing in that relationship over time. And not that every client's going to stay with you for 20 years, but some will. Somebody's going to, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's something so important that I think very well-established and well-respected business professionals do. You don't just come with your hand out. You really cultivate a relationship, regardless if you need something or they need something. But I think over time, there will be that return on investment. And I love that return on relationship. And, there wasn't necessarily this moment where I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to walk away from my job and start my own thing. But I do think that, people can do it whatever stage of their career and really make it a focus. But it helps you grow as a person and grow as a professional. I mean, I'm learning tons of things that I would never have even thought about to start a business. And that's really exciting. I mean, as a lifelong learner, I think that it's just a great opportunity to try new things and hopefully make some money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's, it all works well when we're all making money at it, right? Everybody's happy.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Oh, personal growth, blah, blah, blah. Where's the money?
passion. Let me tell you about my passion. Yeah. My passion costs money. I love what you said that it's not just a snap thing or maybe an overnight thing. And I think a lot of people think that jumping into owning your own business or being an entrepreneur is like an overnight thing, or, in the movies, you always see somebody snap or something happens and they say, I'm going to start my own restaurant or whatever it might be. It doesn't happen that way, does it? It's sort of a slow grind, and every day you're thinking, I could do this in a different way. I could do this for myself. I could do it the way I want to do it.
Absolutely. And I think this whole idea of entrepreneurship really did ignite my passion to be able to focus on projects that really excite me and intrigue me. And I just knew that I would regret it if I didn't try this. I mean, again, there was no cartoon bubble over my head with a little light bulb that said, I'm going to do this today.
Yeah.
But it was a slower boil, even thinking, should I, might I, do I want to? And I think, one of the things that you and I have talked about in the past is what advice would you give to someone who might want to start? And I think the best thing that even just so very early, which might be the perfect opportunity, the perfect time to give this piece of advice, would be find your inner confidence. The woulds and the shoulds and the mights, but try it on for size. Look at yourself in the dressing room. Is it too small? Is it the right shade of color? Make it your own, because you don't have to think about starting your own business as your last step. You might love it, you might fall in love with it, you might decide there will be another step. So
yeah.
I think that, to me, put a little bit more peace of mind as I'm navigating a lot of the challenges, frankly. The hopes that you're going to convert a business and you didn't, or, it was going to be a larger project, but it's, budget availability, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that knowing that I'm on a longer journey than just what's in front of me, that's a great thing to try and remember every day. Just tell yourself that in the mirror.
You give yourself that little pep talk every morning.
Right? Yeah, exactly. It's the old SNL, like, you're good enough, you're smart enough.
Yep. You know, it's funny you say that too, about that it isn't what's in front of you, it's the whole journey, because the one thing I think I've come to realize over the past few years is what's in front of you is going to change no matter what. So even if you stay in the established job or in a in industry that you're not really that passionate about, but it's okay, it's all going to change anyway. I mean, you know, everything's going to change, and change has accelerated in that 5 years from now, the only thing I can guarantee to you and me and everyone listening is we're going to be doing something different than we are today. There's no way around it. No, I mean, you're in marketing. That changes, what, every 6 months? You know, I do a lot of social media marketing. That changes every 6.5 months. You know, it's just constant change. So anyone thinking that, you know, I'm comfortable, I'm just going to do this established routine that, that, you know, I don't really like it, but it doesn't suck too bad. It's going to change. So get ready for it and get out in front of it and change everything into something that you want to do. And I think that's where you're getting into this, this area of the passion project, right? So tell us about your passion project. What is it? How did it come around? And I think we're going to be talking about some food here, right?
Yes, indeed. So Dining Digest Chicago, it was, I guess it came about a few years ago, although it didn't really manifest digitally until last October. So it was born of this, I guess, notion that I'm a walking Zagat, according to my friends and family. So I would get emails and calls and requests on a fairly frequent basis, which made me feel good because, you know, helping people, but it's also, they trust my judgment, but it would be anywhere from, oh, you know, my husband and I are going to go to dinner and what's a good spot in Logan Square, to literally, I'm now planning my friend's business dinners. I need, you know, a private room for 8 people in River North and moderate. I'm like, okay, this is getting out of control. But, you know, I just really liked it. And I think actually that was the tip of the spear maybe for my entrepreneurial spirit. So I decided, you know, in the age of social media, right, why not make it a digital platform where I could help more people? I haven't monetized it quite yet, though I do actually do some events offline as well through my brand, bringing some brands together, selling tickets, et cetera. But I just love restaurants. I love exploring different neighborhoods. I love writing and I love marketing. So this was, you know, a perfect storm of all of that brought together. So it's Dining Digest Chicago on Facebook and Dining Digest Chai, C-H-I, on Instagram. And eventually I'm going to probably get to, you know, the diningdigestchicago.com platform, which I do own. But, you know, as many passion projects, sometimes you just don't have as much time.
Right. Well, I think the interesting thing to me is that you chose to jump into Instagram, you know, as a project pretty early in the cycle of Instagram. And it really kind of popped out at me, mostly because it's really good looking food, right? You know, it's all of these pictures of really good looking appetizing food. You know, a warning to everyone, don't look at this feed until you've had lunch, because you're going to get really quick. But I think there was a spark there that if you had only done Facebook, and God forbid you did Twitter back when, you know, that was viable, the visual element would not have been there, and you would have gotten, you know, no pun intended, you would have gotten eaten up by everybody else's content. So your Instagram feed has really blown up in the past year or so. Is that right?
Yeah, I'd say so. And just a side note, all of my photos I do take myself, and it is a food that I myself eat. So that's a little nit, but I've noticed that, you know, people obviously give credit to other people's photos. I'm proud just for myself that it's, you know, what I eat, my photos, et cetera. But one thing that I think I've done well to help the growth, which has grown about 4x in the last 14 months, is a focus on, I think, the work, the dedication, the wit, and the content strategy. So, you know, I think, you know, having a marketing background helps. tapping into certain things going on in the city, or, you know, hashtag Taco Tuesdays is very popular. So kind of, and also befriending different influencers too, because there is certainly that influencer strategy there. And I do think that people, you know, we talk about social media, and I think that what people need to remember the social in social media, because sometimes people tend to just distribute one-way communication, and that's not how you're going to grow your Instagram or, frankly, any of your accounts. It has to be that give and take of really having a conversation. I think it's just important for people to know you're also a human and not a handle. Tell a little bit about yourself. When I see people, the people on their Instagram or Facebook or what have you, it reminds people that there's a human behind them.
Yeah.
So I think that's really an important part of it. And the third thing I'd say about the growth, and I referenced this earlier, but the idea of bridging, I think, experiential and digital. So I host live events, working with some restaurant or beverage brands, bringing them together that complement one another and help advance my brand recognition as well at the same time. So helping them is helping me, kind of a win-win. But getting off the computer and offline communications can be just as effective as well to advance your brand as just hanging out on IG.
But then when you're in real life, taking some great video, taking some great shots of what's happening at the event, and then you've got more content to share and more things to engage some of those folks who maybe joined you, or some of the people who wanted to join you but couldn't.
Exactly. I just did that. I hosted a barbecue, beer, and blues event in celebration of National Barbecue Month, which is May, for all you people who didn't know that, a little known fact. But we kicked off summer and took some video, I took some photos back on the Facebook page, and it has some pretty good engagement, and it just helps amplify, what I'm trying to do here. So it's been a great ride, but again, it's hard work and dedication. You don't buy followers. That's just not what you do.
Yeah.
You build a community.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're using, I think on both Facebook and Instagram, you're using the stories function pretty extensively. Is that right?
I am. Yes. It's something that I probably more recently in the last 6 to 8 months, came into, but it does help your footprint. And it's pretty interesting stuff. Although you wind up, spending maybe a little too much time because they keep going until you stop them and you're, 7-8 stories in.
Yeah.
Like, okay, gotta get to work now.
But I think there's something there that a lot of brands, organizations, small businesses, they're just not using it yet. So I think, I've been telling, people I'm working with, hey, jump on this now, because there's only a small percentage of people who are actually putting content there every day or every couple of days. So, it's, there's a lot of vacancy there.
That's right. And you will stand out because you'll be a bit more of an early adopter. And the conversion to purchase is so easy. It's, the marketing funnel of being aware of something, so now you're engaging with it, and then it's a click to purchase or it's a swipe to purchase. I think that more brands should definitely be assessing what the opportunity is in their marketing mix.
Very good. So let's talk a little Chicago dining. Tell me about some trends happening on the dining scene here.
Oh boy. I moved to Chicago in 2004. Oh my gosh, from New York, and so I get back to New York a lot. I love both cities. People always ask which I like better, so I'm just going to be equal here.
We're not going to get into a pizza fight here, are we?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know all your listener group, so I'm not going to offend anyone. But it was so different back then. I think it's changed time and time again, obviously, to today. I mean, I think a huge milestone for Chicago is when they moved the James Beard Awards to Chicago from New York. I mean, if that doesn't speak volumes.
Yeah.
To just the exponential growth. I think that it's become, increasingly sophisticated and bold, which is a trend that I love. I mean, obviously Grant Shaw put Chicago on the map, with Alinea and, you know, now with Royster and things that he's continually bringing out and coming down the pike with him, but the experience. And I think that's a huge trend and something that a lot of restaurants are trying to tap into, that you're not just going out for dinner, you're going to have a dining experience.
Ah, yeah. And let's talk a little bit more in the few minutes we have left on some trends on the other side of your business. What are you seeing happening with your customers and the people you're consulting with in the MarCom world and digital marketing? Anything really standing out that that we should be watching for?
So I think there's a couple of things. You know, we talk about storytelling. Everyone kind of talks about storytelling, but especially in B2B brands, I'm seeing this more and more of they embracing that idea, especially around content marketing, because people, they don't want to just know what you sell. They want to know what a brand stands for. Mm-hmm. And I actually was reading this this great marketing article, and I think it was Adweek, Sprout Social had this survey. It was about championing change in the age of social media. And the results were such that 2/3 of consumers said it was either somewhat important or very important. So top two box, you know, for brands to take a stand on social and political issues. And I thought, how fascinating. I don't think that 10 years ago people would have cared, what their toilet paper or, right. you know, what their soda stood for. And I think that that really goes back to how are you showing up? Where are you showing up? And what are you saying beyond trying to sell something? So I'd say that's a huge trend. And then another one that I've noticed actually just yesterday, IKEA has this great print ad. So print is not dead. You know, digital marketing is absolutely here to stay, but this blend of digital experiential, I mentioned it my personal brand, but something that I'm trying to help companies do a better job of that online offline connection. It just, you know, it's that 1+1=3 amplification. And IKEA came out with a great ad for, basically selling fleets. And they have this, this print ad that is supposed to act like a sleeping aid. So you actually tear it out of a magazine, assemble it like an IKEA product, and you set it next to your bed. And it emits this lavender, you know, spray and a white noise frequency. So it's fascinating because, and the headline, I mean, you couldn't beat it. It was something along the lines of, you know, the sleepiest ad in the world, or like IKEA's trying to put you to sleep. And it's clever. It was definitely clever copywriting. But that idea that, you know, print ad's not dead, and actually brands are getting really, the good brands are getting really good at it.
Yeah.
Of attention getting and show stopping. So I think as companies think about, you know, their marketing budgets, certainly scalability of digital versus print. But back to the point of Instagram stories, it's almost like print becoming what's old is new again. And if you do it well, there's fewer companies almost doing it. So you can be more of a standout if you have something clever to say.
Yeah. And if you do something really cool, like the IKEA example, here we are on a digital podcast talking about that print story. So do something analog and then get the digital world buzzing and scaling it out there for you. That's that seems like a pretty good strategy. We've got just a minute left. So Debbie Harvey, DHW Executive Consulting and Dining Digest Chicago, thank you so much for joining Social Geek Radio today. And if our listeners have further questions for you, either on the marketing side or the restaurant side, what's a good place for them to connect and ask you a few more questions?
Sure. So I obviously am on all sorts of social media, but on Facebook, you can find me in either brand, so Dining Digest Chicago or DHW Executive Consulting, or you can just email me directly at dhwexec@gmail.com. And I'm thrilled to have been on the show. I will go off and give this a fantastic review, mostly for the host, not for the guest.
Oh, brother. Oh, stop. All right, Debbie Harvey, thank you so much for joining Social Geek Radio today. Thank you and good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Social Geek Radio. Copyright 2018 Social Geek Radio.